Welcome to the Unforgiving 60 with your hosts, Ben Pronk and Tim Curtis.
And welcome to the Unforgiving 60 podcast. I'm Tim Curtis with my co-host, Ben Pronk.
G'day, Tim.
RV14, the season finale of season one.
Yeah.
Few things to do.
There are.
Well, if there weren't, we could close out right now.
But
we're going to reflect on the Heard Island episode.
Yeah, good one.
We're going to take questions, observations and feedback from listeners.
Yeah, and we've had some great feedback from listeners in the last couple of months.
We're going to rewind the clock 12 months, genesis of the Unforgiving 60 podcast, where we started and where we ended up.
Yep.
And then perhaps performance appraisal reports, how you went in season one. And how I went in season one.
Are you ready for a courageous conversation?
Always. Speak truth to power, Ben.
You're not power. But there will be truth. There will be some hard truths.
There is no power.
There is no power.
And then lastly, looking forward into season two, a few of the initiatives we're pulling together. Let's get on with the show. Okay, Ben, so episode 34, Climbing Active Volcanoes in the Sub-Antarctic Area, Heard Island, otherwise known as Mawson Peak and or Big Ben, Australia's highest peak and active volcano.
This was a bittersweet episode for me. It was sweet in that I didn't have to do much. It was bitter in listening to you bang on about your past exploits. But actually, it was fascinating hearing our two guests, Matt and Mr. Clifton, who, and along with yourself, Tim, I begrudgingly admit, it was a pretty amazing story.
And the fourth member of the expedition was missing, Stu. It was really cool. I think we, in the last 20 years, bearing in mind that we recorded the episode 20 years after we landed on Heard Island and climbed the mountain.
In fact, not far off the actual 20th anniversary, was it?
That's right. Yeah. We went ashore on the 1st of January in the year 2000 as the millennium clicked over from the 90s
decade,
to the 2000 decade
century.
As well. Year.
Yeah.
We went ashore and spent 16 days climbing that mountain and all the sorts of emotions in between. But what I was going to say is in the 20 years since that time, we've never really, the four of us who were on that expedition, we've never really talked about it.
Was that deliberate? Was there some kind of pact? We'll never mention what happened on the island. Was there some weird stuff that went on and that made you silent for two decades?
What happens on the island stays on the island. Well, there are a few little anecdotes that I will not tell, but for the most part, all really good. Mm. Now, I think it's testament to the humility of the three guys that went south with me.
I was going to say I would like to see a testimony to your humility. I'm yet to see that. But I agree. It's a pretty impressive achievement. I don't think I'd heard a lot about it, but I don't think I'd appreciated just sort of, it was almost unprecedented. It was a massive logistical effort, not to mention a fairly difficult technical sort of climb.
Yeah, and one that we screwed up, and we talked a little bit about that. We picked the wrong route, the wrong side of the mountain, the one that was principally exposed to the weather, and the weather down there is incredible. Mm-hmm. Rob Clifton, who's in the Antarctic Division, talks about Heard Island and that sub-Antarctic zone, and his perspective is really unique because he's living it as now a member of the Australian Antarctic Division.
Do you think he'll get a bit of pushback from the fact that you did get within the 5 metre exclusive zone of a penguin?
Ah, yes. Yeah. Well, no one tells the penguins the exclusive zones, as Rob will tell you. So if they encroach upon your personal space, that's okay.
I guess that's, it's like working with a famous actor. If the penguin approaches you, that's fine. Mm. You just don't approach a penguin.
If the penguin fits. Look, and the one thing that recording that episode forced me to do was go back and find my photo album. We took wet film.
Yep.
And I also kept a journal.
Your diary.
And some of that I've read on our social media particularly the pre-summit day, the day before we actually summited, which was a super trying day, and we were in a really difficult position. So it was interesting what I remembered, and then going back to my journal and what I'd written down at the time.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed it, and thank you for your tolerance in that was us okay. recording the episode.
In fact, if we could do more episodes like that, where I can just sit on the couch and have a brew while you bang on, I'd appreciate it.
I think you were sketching.
I might have been.
What were you sketching?
The guests. Yeah, Maddie in particular.
Yeah. And thanks to Matt, to Rob, and to Stu, firstly for our experiences 20 years ago, which for me were incredibly spiritual, but also for them coming on the show and talking a little bit about that incredible opportunity that we had, a real privilege to be down there.
Yeah, and a privilege to see it. I mean, we spoke about mateship in the RSL episode, but clearly that was a friendship that already existed, but was forged that little bit harder under those trying circumstances. And you could really see that through the interaction with you guys on the day.
Yeah, small expedition group, only four of us. We only had each other. We were 3,500 kilometres away from the closest medical care. And if we could get back in touch with that fishing trawler, it was 7 days steaming to the closest hospital. No hospital on board the ship, only a seagoing medic. So, yeah, I think that that reliance on each other was really important in forging, furthering the bonds of friendship that we already had.
Good one.
And unlike some expeditions, we remain very close friends today.
Nice one.
Okay, questions and feedback from listeners. Ben, you have control, you have control.
We've had some great feedback. We were just talking about the Heard Island expedition, but we got a really cool email from Lockie, who has done some pretty amazing stuff himself, but has an extremely amazing plan to retrace some of the steps of the Falklands campaign. So he reached out to us. Lockie's actually an Army helicopter pilot, and he and I had flown together. As in, he flew.
I was
ballast.
Where were you in that aircraft?
I was inverted.
No, that's right.
I was in the back. Regardless, Lockie and a couple of his mates are looking to retrace some of the steps of the Falklands campaign, which sounds like absolutely a life less ordinary. And we look forward to following Lockie's journey as he develops the plans and ultimately commits to that expedition.
Bayonet charge at Goose Green?
It's interesting. I actually said to Lockie, I hope you're doing the aviation version of the Falklands campaign, which is largely sitting in warm places, sipping cups of tea and doing the occasional sortie. But he assured us he was doing the infantry version. So potentially.
Potentially.
Yeah.
Interesting. Oh, good luck to Lockie. That's fantastic. I love the idea.
We've also had some great feedback from, is Ireland the other side of the globe?
Oh, God. Halfway, full way, it's, three quarters of the way.
It's far away. But yeah, our listenership extends all the way to the United Kingdom. And Mark in Ireland, who does some great work himself in the leadership space, reached out to say good day. And we've traded a few thoughts on leadership, and we'll stay in touch. But it's really cool to hear that sort of feedback and to know that there's a few listeners in far-flung places from here.
What was the knowledge exchange on leadership?
We were talking a lot about leadership under pressure, and we're reflecting obviously on the tragic bushfires that are going on in Australia at the moment, and how that's brought out some good, bad and ugly in terms of leadership at all levels, decision making and leadership, right way from the quite literally the coalface up to the senior decision makers. So yeah, some interesting lessons coming out of that.
Yeah, in fact, hold that thought for 1 second, because our season one is short, one planned episode. We were going to interview someone who is on the south coast of New South Wales in Australia, and the horrendous bushfires precluded us getting there. We drove about halfway and found the road closed.
Stop. We'll do that interview.
Must.
Hamo's a champion. We've been in touch with him. We've got a bunch of mutual friends, and he's doing some incredible things. He's a blacksmith, specialising in forging knives and other items from metal, and we're really keen to get down and have a yarn with him. But not only is he doing these incredible things in forgery, is that
Is that copying?
is he a forger? But incredible things with metal. But he's also using that as a vehicle to help people who are having mental health issues.
And the story gets a bit better because he was told to evacuate his rural property and he refused to do so.
It'll be a great yarn and we're looking forward to catching up with Hemo. We've also had some great correspondence with Alex, who, you know, we talk about going a little further, leading lives less ordinary. Alex broke his back in a parachuting accident, but has managed to come back from that. And some really inspirational sort of reflections on how he managed to essentially have a look at himself and, as he puts it, to choose to get up off the couch and make a complete recovery. And some wonderful stories about him having these meetings with people who told him he'd sort of never make it. And then 10 years later, as a more senior, very successful member of the Defence Force, re-meeting that person and that nice sort of moment when he's come full circle after a pretty trying experience.
A military parachuting accident. That's the most miserable form of parachuting there is, Ben.
Yep, those things are not built for comfort. They're built for speed, designed to get you to the ground as quickly as possible. And of course, when you've got 100 paratroopers in the air, the last thing you want is to give those paratroopers control over where they're going to go and where they're going to land. And so essentially, you jump out and hang on for dear life.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. Yep. And you know the parachute's going to open, but you're going to hit the ground hard.
Yeah. Static line parachuting. Not good fun. Not a good sport.
That's right. Well, the other steerable parachutes, you're not sure if the parachute's going to open, but you're not going to hit the ground hard.
Unless you do a downwinder, in which case you're going to hit it twice as hard.
Have you done a downwinder?
No.
I did have an entanglement with other paratrooper.
Really? How'd you get out of that?
Designated malfunction.
Did you kick and twist and do all the stuff they teach you at the parachute training school?
Well, it was actually on our Ram Air parachute course, mm-hmm. and a guy that we know in the SAS regiment. Unfortunately, he had twists, and by the time my opening sequence was complete, he had driven right into me and had mummified me and was just hanging off my feet with his canopy wrapped all the way around me. So my canopy...
Would he have a different recollection of that?
He will have the correct recollection of me being mummified with my hands pinned to my side because of the his canopy wrapped around me, and me telling him in no uncertain words that... he needed to cut away, which is what he did.
And you got a free parachute.
I got two parachutes.
Yep.
He only got a halfie. He got his reserve. but he cut away his gear. He cut away the main chute. He deployed his reserve, landed safely. And as someone from the ground said, I looked like Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, with my parachute and then another grey parachute trailing on behind.
Right. That is not the first time you've been compared to Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. We've also had some fantastic feedback from Kirsty. And in fact, Kirsty has been so kind as to give us a few contacts for upcoming episodes. So, Kirsty, thank you very much for looking after us and for tipping us in some really interesting guests who will have coming up this year.
Fantastic. Now, nearly a year ago, what's the date today?
I don't think we'll even know. Hang on, it's on, folds are in the computer, 22nd of January.
So yes, nearly a year ago, on the 26th of January in the year 2019, we recorded our season one, episode one.
The infamous elevator pitch.
The infamous elevator pitch.
We did that on 26th of January.
26th of January.
Huh.
Posted on the 26th of January. Hmm. Let's talk about the genesis of the program and maybe where we've got to in season one in this finale of the RV. What were you feeling before the 26th of January with the idea that we would come together and do this podcast, Ben?
I was begrudgingly happy to go along
begrudgingly
with
happy.
What was clearly a Tim Curtis vanity project.
Okay, and on the 26th of January, we came into the studio and I can absolutely attest to the fact that you did not want to be here. Mm-hmm. How did you feel after recording that episode? A little
Look, I felt that if this was going to go ahead, it needed me.
You were hopeless. And I figured that most of the magic was coming from me. So I figured, out of a gesture of goodwill towards yourself, Tim, that I'd keep doing it.
And we have 34 episodes plus RVs in season one. And
what is the total? It's 34, 14, 48?
51.
Yeah.
Including this, 52. So 52.
34 plus 14 is not 52.
Well, I'm looking here and seeing 51 episodes plus another RV is 52.
Okay, we'll do the
We'd
maths.
We'd like to interview a mathematician. Season two, if anyone's out there and can do some basic math.
But we've had a bunch of episodes.
We have done a bunch of things.
Yep.
And a real variety. So season one, episode one was the elevator pitch.
Yep.
And then we had Dr. Dan Pronk.
He's average 70 kilo dickhead.
Yep.
Yep.
Talking a range of different things, including what first aid item you absolutely need to have in your home and the car, and also post-traumatic growth.
Yeah.
The feedback on that particular episode relating to post-traumatic growth, people have said it was absolutely inspiring, and that is one of our most downloaded episodes.
That is our, begrudgingly, I'll admit that my brother's episode is number one with a bullet.
Talking about overachievers, our next episode was Tim Robertson, the F-18 pilot who got bored being an F-18 pilot and came and did SAS selection.
Mm-hmm.
Also plays a variety of musical instruments.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone always thought that, oh, Robbo, he's a natural. He can just fly a plane. He can do SAS selection and pass it. Just gets up in the morning, learns how to play the piano in 15 minutes. And what Robbo talked about in that episode was that's not the case.
And look, that's been a constant theme, and it clearly unintentional, but starting off with a story about an average 70-kilo dickhead, we're finding more and more that these people who are doing incredible things are not some kind of superhuman species, but they're ordinary folk who just go a little bit further, who commit themselves, who work hard, who have a vision, who don't give up. And that's been, for me, one of the most amazing things out of this little journey to date, is hearing that constant reiteration. Almost gives you hope, Tim.
No.
Doesn't.
I don't think so.
You are hopeless.
Hopeless.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Armstrong, all the way from Myanmar. We interviewed Elizabeth, who's the director of a peace program up there that's actually undergone tremendous growth this year because of the donor's confidence in what she's developed and is delivering in gender, peace and security initiatives in Myanmar.
Yep, and completely unsurprising to you and I who know and have worked with Elizabeth, an amazing individual, again, going a little further, just an absolutely incredible story, that one. I loved that episode.
Cross-cultural leadership, she knows it. She's exceptional with her team.
No, it's tough.
Tim Jack Adams, mindfulness, no-nonsense stuff. We were a bit sceptical on this thing called mindfulness.
I think probably the nomenclature more than the concept. And this has been another thing that just keeps coming up. You know, people living in the moment, people taking that time to center themselves. We've banged on ad nauseum about stoicism, which I find a wonderful philosophy. But we're all talking about the same sort of stuff. Work out what you can control, get on with controlling that, do that to the best of your ability, and cut away all the other stuff.
Yep. Nick Caldwell, from the wheat room to the boardroom.
Yeah, yeah.
Former SAS soldier, now doing a variety of different things in life after the military.
Yep. Great stuff. And that was recorded in the Mill Gym. Really, I enjoyed that. I think that was our first on-location episode. And, it had a very strong ambiance, that place.
Brigadier Rupert Hoskin AM,
yeah,
the Commandant of the Royal Military College Duntroon.
Steadfast.
Preparing junior leaders, including preparing junior leaders who will step out of the Royal Military College and go straight on operations.
Yep.
Rupe's just finished up as the Commandant.
Yep.
We wish him all the best in his next appointment, but some cool insights.
Yeah, and look, I think, I mean, you and I probably knew this, but a lot of people, I think, probably look at the military as a pretty staid,
archaic sort of institution that is living in a previous era, but clearly from Roop's discussion, very contemporary thinking, very open to new ways of doing things, very open to modifying the model for new generations, new contexts, new operating environments. And I find that a great chat.
Rod Bridge lost his son, Preston. Jeez. Tough episode.
Yeah, that was a real, heartbreaking story, obviously, and just so moving to hear how he dealt with that and how he was, as much as you can, leveraging that absolute tragedy to a really positive end.
Mm. Sometimes it's really hard to have the conversations on alcohol and drugs around the kitchen table. And I've played the episode for my kids, and it definitely, coming at them from that different angle, hearing Rod Bridge on a podcast talking about the way it completely changed his life, his family's life, and ended Preston's. Yeah, it was good for them to hear that.
Yeah.
Jason Semple, The Strength of the Thin Blue Line.
My goodness.
Rookie cop knifed in the street.
Quite literally should have been dead.
Mm-hmm.
Lost. In fact, we got Dr. Dan on to talk about how many litres of blood are in the human body, and I think Jason lost more blood than should have even been in his body. It was an amazing story. And again, overcoming that, getting dealt a terrible hand, just incredibly unfortunate incident, but getting over it mentally and physically and coming out the other side, having grown.
Yeah, and losing his partner, which is part of that tragic story. Sabine Bird, world champion endurance cyclist, holds the...
Doesn't all she do is sit on a bike and pedal?
Well, simply stated, that's probably true, but she does it for 24 hours and breaks the world record.
Couldn't believe it when she said that. And to our earlier point about the humility and the attitude of these incredible people that we've had on the show, Sabine really personified that, where she just sort of shrugged her shoulders and said, I just ride a bike, nothing out of the ordinary, when clearly that's not the case.
Amazing. Ordinary people doing extraordinary things. Mm. When she first walked into the studio, I remember her saying, don't understand why you want to interview me.
Why would you? Yeah.
She attempted the race across America this year from the West Coast to the East Coast. An incredible achievement.
Absolutely.
In itself.
Yeah.
Simon Bailey, ordering your house, undies, drawers, and communications. God, he speaks beautifully, Simon Bailey.
Put us to shame. That was the downside of that episode, that we sounded even more amateur than we normally do. But we've worked with Simon a few times, through our business, but also sort of got some advice from him on comm stuff, but absolutely cracking episode.
Yeah, like Simon's company immensely.
Yeah.
Leanne Barron, combating domestic violence when the home is a battlefield.
Starrick continues to do incredible things. That, for me, was a particularly moving episode, and just Leanne's ability to continue through the day after day of being exposed to this and what she must see and the story she must hear, and yet remain so upbeat and so positive, was incredible. And budding ukulele career.
Well, I think she has recorded her first piece of
not
ukulele.
Recorded, done an open mic with some original ukulele music.
Even better.
No, fantastic. Really inspirational stuff from Leanne.
And then it was the two Andrews, two federal politicians, not talking politics. Andrew Lee, firstly.
Mm-hmm. Or was it Andrew Hastie, firstly? I don't think we'll ever know.
It's difficult to remember back that far.
Who'd have thought, though, that politicians are real people?
Yeah.
These folk you see on TV with a pretty tough job of trying to run this country and trying to get some form of consensus between parties and people and push in the right direction. Just fascinating to hear them talk about themselves as people, what interests, what motivates them and what drives them to go a little further in the interest of the public good.
Mm, a heap of pressing priorities. Mm. Gonna get their family piece done, their fitness done, their travel for those politicians that live interstate, and then when they're in Canberra, it sounds relentless.
Yeah, hardcore. The bit I took away from Andrew Lee's discussion was his his term Lovelopte, just that beautiful moment where you're in the zone. Originally in cycling, Andrew applies it in the running context, but that was a really nice little snapshot and talks to our discussion earlier about mindfulness being there in the moment. And, you know, these are all we've got, these little snapshots, and that's a beautiful way to spend them.
Then Harry and Weema, the stories and music of the SAS rock band The Externals.
We are very grateful to The Externals for allowing us to use their music. Hopefully we've sort of exposed their tracks to a new listenership. But yeah, these guys, complete champions, absolute stars in their own right, in their own fields. Harry's just started his own consulting firm. Harry's a psych now. So the Stoughton Group is doing some incredible things in high-performance psych work. But in the background, he's still a rock front man at heart.
As is Weema, who's still serving in the military and still playing bass in a Sydney rock band, mostly punk, I think. And we dragged them into the 1990s. Finally, for those that have requested to get access to their music on Spotify specifically, they've done it. Just in the last week, Weema has uploaded some more albums onto Spotify. And he did say thank you very much to all of those listeners that have been on Spotify listening to their tunes. He's been quite overwhelmed by the amount of downloads and listens from Spotify.
And if you haven't, jump on. It's well worth a listen.
Matty Hall, Australia's only elite Red Bull air racer, the top gun, and world champion.
Yeah.
Undefeatable.
Undefeatable world champion. And the second of three F-18 pilots we've had the pleasure of interviewing, and the other two have both described him as a natural. You don't hear that too often. It's interesting along the theme, you know, we talked about average 70 kilo dickheads going a bit further. Seems that Matty might be a little special to start with.
Well, he said, yes, some natural ability plus a lot of hard work.
And yeah, no one's taking that away. I mean, that idea that there's probably a bunch of natural talents out there that you've never heard of because they haven't been willing to have that laser focus and have the drive to keep putting in the yards.
And you don't generally think about a pilot being an elite athlete, but Matt Hall is not just a pilot but an elite athlete and a business owner, and the way that he prepares for a Red Bull Air race and or any, you know, really tough flying mission is unbelievable. Very meticulous.
Yeah. And there's probably a good incentive to be quite meticulous when you're flying at 300 knots 20 feet above the drink.
From 300 knots to 300 kilometres an hour, Jess Dane, 888 Race Engineering, talking about elite motorsports teams.
And in particular, you know, we were blown away by the feedback we got on Jess, or on the episode with Jess. And just a superstar, I don't even think needed to sort of drill into the gender side of that because the story spoke for itself. Really cool.
A CrossFitter?
Yeah.
Her grandfather served with the British SAS.
That's an impressive story in its own right.
Yeah. Then we went into the workshop with Greg Wallace, not just building surfboards, but rebuilding people in the process.
So much. We've maintained our relationship with Greg. We stay in touch. True champion and actually expanding. He's doing a lot of good things, continues to go from strength to strength with Connected By. So expanding from just surfboards to a variety of media, but again, really focused on helping other people and getting people into that mindfulness.
We're going to build a surfboard this year. You won't like the idea.
I never do.
Because it's mine. But I think it would be fantastic to do that.
Mm.
Maybe even to surf it and donate it.
Charlie don't surf? I don't surf.
Maybe that's why you'll donate it.
Yeah.
Then, the entrepreneur's entrepreneur, Phil Hayes Sinclair. Phil HSC.
Yeah. Really, I mean, I'm still stinging a bit because clearly, as startup founders, we're lemons. Phil gave us some great top tips in terms of what we're doing wrong. But how many people has Phil helped? And in fact, over the Christmas period, Phil was on the phone to me to sort of broker a call with someone, but he'd spearheaded the delivery of a whole bunch of drinking water. He'd got Coke to provide a whole bunch of fresh drinking water and got the military to start delivering it to where it was needed most in the bushfire combating efforts. Absolute, just typifies his mindset. He sees a problem and he does something about it. And I think that episode really captured that in him.
He's about to release his new podcast.
Mm.
He was also on the phone to me about a collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
Great concept. I provisionally said yes on behalf of you and I.
Yep.
And we look forward to that.
Yep.
With Phil.
Without a doubt.
More to follow.
Yeah.
Sans Tattoo. Conversations with Nelson Mandela and subsequent corporate combat.
Yeah, good dude. We, again, have maintained a relationship with Sons. We know him very well and look to him actually as the kind of benchmark in keynote speaking, you know, being able to capture an audience and deliver a message. And so he gave us some great top tips in that episode. Based on real life stuff. I mean, this guy's not a sort of professional actor or any of those kind of things. He's a practitioner. He's had that time on the door in nightclubs, and it was interesting seeing some of those little lessons translated from, you know, when you're about to get shirt fronted by a drunk thug in a nightclub to how you can win an audience back and ways to regulate your own emotions to be able to get on with the show under pressure.
Also a paratrooper in his first career in the military,
mm-hmm.
and trained Nelson Mandela's bodyguard in his own style of combat. I've talked about doing his combat course.
Yeah.
And God, Sons is in his 50s and he punches hard, Ben.
I will take your word for that.
Oh, God. Yeah. Oh, I was sore for a week after that.
Mm.
Mark Walling talking about movement being a story. I've enjoyed getting his blogs.
Mark writes and speaks so beautifully, has an amazing catalogue of experience to draw from, working with Indigenous people throughout Australia, but largely in the outback, and currently really giving back in terms of helping out at the PCYC down in Frio, running a boxing program down there to help a whole bunch of folk find a bit of focus.
Susan Saliba, Kenyan orphanage, just giving it all in Kenya to improve the lives of homeless children.
Nakura Hope, what an amazing story. And just, I loved that conversation. We often forget sort of sitting in these beautiful pockets of the world that we're lucky enough to live in. And her conversation about shopping for kumquats or figs or something in the boat shed, a very high-end grocery store in Cottesloe here in Perth, and just realising just how lucky we are. And not only that she's going to do something about it, and she has.
Mm, and she does take volunteers over there. And if you're searching for something to do in the coming year, maybe put your hand up and volunteer to assist in that Kenyan orphanage.
Yeah.
Volunteer meaningfully, not for the Instagram.
Yeah, yeah. It's not well, it's very selfie-friendly, I guess, but it's got to be about more than that.
Chris Collard,
mm.
from jail to world champion kickboxer in 5 years.
That was a cracking episode. What was also cracking was what he did to my face about 2 weeks earlier. When we first met him. And we met him through Mark Walling down at the Frio PCYC gym. But, Chris, what an inspiration.
Mm-hmm. Jim Molan, AODSC, not taking a backward step in his service to country.
No.
Out of uniform, into politics. He had a hiatus out of politics and now he's back in the Senate.
largely thanks to our episode, I think.
Without question.
Yeah.
Without question, driving his social media. And in fact, speaking of social media, he has been in the midst of the bushfires. The first thing he did was pack a bag and head out to show his support and raise awareness to the plight of those that had lost homes and or were fighting fires in New South Wales. Really interesting
stuff. Typifies his leadership style and the calibre of the man.
Yeah, and I think in one post, to paraphrase a little bit, he was hoping, particularly with the deployment of the Australian Defence Force as part of the fire response efforts, he was hoping to be able to bring the ADF closer into the community, just using some of his linkages. Sam Penny, swim the English Channel.
Distribute a bit of cheese along the way?
Yeah,
or did he
right.
get the cheese from France on the way back? Yeah, that was awesome. Just like Sabine Bird just gets on a bike and turns the pedals over, Sam just rolls his arms over, counts to 10 and does it again. Hundreds of times, double-crossing of the channel.
He takes inspiration from a Tom Brady line, I didn't come this far to only come this far, planning for his double channel crossing. However, in true operational security, he tried to become, in December, the first person to swim the English Channel in winter.
Can you even get your head around trying or thinking of that for a start? I mean, to me, that is just something you don't do. But Sam lathered himself in Vaseline, whatever it is.
Channel grease.
And made a crack at that. Can you imagine diving in, like just that cold, dark, bleak, you know, talk about mental strength to be able to get those arms rolling over and even have a crack at that.
I think he got 3.5 hours in before his body started to shut down with the cold.
Mate, I don't even like doing things I like for 3.5 hours, let alone swimming the channel in winter.
Richard Baker, journalistic royalty, multi-award-winning journalist.
Yeah.
Particularly a very good podcaster. His last two series have been award-winning podcast series.
And rightly so, they're awesome.
And the one last year.
Yeah. The Last Voyage
of the Pong Su, also excellent. I can't believe how many comments he's had on the Apple podcast, remarks, replies on that.
Yeah, but again, rightly so. I mean, the depth of research, the balance of opinions and perspectives and stories that he was able to present on that situation was really incredible.
We're going to see him again at the Australian Podcast Awards, aren't we?
We're serving drinks, I think.
You might be front of house. I'm definitely back of house. I'll be doing dishes.
Yeah, that will be the only way we're there.
Alyssa Azar, the youngest Australian to summit Everest.
Incredible.
And has summited twice.
Yep. North and south.
Yes.
Amazing. Yep.
From both sides of the border.
Yeah.
Meticulous preparation, mindset, phenomenal.
Well, and has the ability to overcome setbacks and disappointments. So a couple of early attempts that just didn't work, weather closed in, you know, tragic events on the mountain, and yet undeterred, you know, imagine the anticlimax, prepping for an expedition, getting there.
Getting to base camp.
And then, no, shut down, it's not going to happen this year. I think that would be about the point that I'd throw my teddies out of the cot and quit. But Alyssa just recocked, reloaded, went back the next year. Amazing.
Inspiring. Jimmy McEwen, who, of course, doesn't tell you that he's won the 2019 Australian Master Distiller of the Year. The young whippersnapper at Whippersnapper Distillery.
Mm. Top story. I loved that heritage bit that, you know, the logo, for those of you who have seen it, a Lancaster bomber with kegs of whiskey in the place of engines, inspired by a neighbour of his who was making moonshine in his backyard in Scarborough, a former Lancaster pilot. All the way from there, Jimmy's original story, really interesting. You know, talk about your sliding doors moment. Could have gone different ways, but he's picked his dream, he's swung for the bleachers, and now look at him, amazing.
We had our Christmas party there too with the Snapper Distillery.
I don't think we'll be invited back.
He was super generous and his team are amazing.
Yeah, really cool. And actually an incredible venue. Certainly if you're in the Perth area, we can firsthand recommend that it's a great place for a function.
That's right. Melina Molino on trail running. Yeah. Gee, she gave it as good as she got it.
Yes. Yep. She held her own is what Tim's trying to say. A really good episode. Again, Lives Less Ordinary is what we're talking about. Melina had come through the US Air Force as a communications technician who, let's be frank, wasn't that okay with computers and and communications, but dragged her way through it. Couple of deployments to Afghanistan, Republic of Korea, some amazing stuff there. And now the Perth Trail Series, which is a really inspirational endeavour.
Has found her bliss. The guy who shows the precision of a fighter pilot and the passion of a poet, Chris Hewitt, a.k.a. CJ Bowerbird.
That was a really moving episode. We recorded that in Canberra, and we've had a bunch of people say things like, you know, just reflect on his poetry, which is, of course, incredible, Australian champion slam poet. But we've had people write in to say that, you know, they've been listening to our episode in the car and they've had to pull over to actually listen really intently, focus all their attention on Chris's poetry. And I can tell you, I almost get goosebumps thinking about when he was there reciting it live, just you and I in this meeting room in Canberra where we were recording the episode. Really stirring stuff.
I've listened to We Live Two Doors Down from Billy Cart Hill.
Yep.
I've listened to that multiple times. In fact, over the Christmas New Year's period, I just found some real inspiration in listening to that. It just takes you back to your childhood years, but then the poem beautifully contrasts into the modern day in the need to be, I think, exploring some of those childlike feelings.
Yeah. Well, and you're doing that, Tim. You're very childish in your approach to life.
I am pretty bad in the office, I will agree. Very distracting.
We live two doors down from Billy Cart Hill, with a slope faster than the stomach, cheese grater tar, and T-intersection traffic to catch our fall. I would drag my cart like a litter up guillotine steps to the top and mount, scary free, like Lucifer felt when God opened his forefinger and thumb and let him drop. I'm rolling, leaning backward, backboard pressing me earthward, re-entering Earth's atmosphere, gravel, rash, knuckles, locked tight.
Love the Chris Hewitt thing.
Yeah,
and you know, also the poem that is spliced in about halfway through that particular episode about him taking a taxi ride home.
Yeah.
It's very cool. Very cool. And then, of course, Hurt On, and we've talked about that.
Also a good one.
So in the military, Ben, we used to give performance appraisal reports, an annual performance appraisal, rating subordinates and sometimes also peers' abilities, attributes, knowledge over the course of a year. How do you think you've gone, young co-host?
Hot to get. was the top category in the what were they? Happy to have.
Not want.
Not want.
Take a chance.
Take a chance. Yeah.
To have and fight to get. They were the categories.
Yeah. No, I'd be fight to get. I've pretty much carried this thing. Actually, that's untrue. I have been a very slack co-host. Tim's been the driving force behind this in many ways. I've enjoyed the ride. Does that count? I've tried hard. I've enjoyed my time.
Well, trying is definitely one thing, but I have your performance appraisal report here.
Here we go.
Ben Pronk started the podcast season slowly and with a very poor attitude. His disinterest in the concept of podcasting was palpable, despite not having ever listened to a podcast. Mm-hmm. Over the initial period, Ben warmed to the idea of the podcast. He did not, however, ever warm to the idea of researching for the podcast. By the middle of the year, Ben had claimed the podcast was always his idea, and by the end of season one, was wondering why he had a co-host. In terms of technical skills and wider ability as an audiographer, Ben's performance was below average. Examples included setting the microphone up back to front for Jim Molan.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted to hear Jim's stuff. No, I want to hear my stuff. Point the live bit at Jim.
Ben subscribes to speed over accuracy in post-production mm-hmm. work. And last, but certainly not least, Ben was able to use the term, quote, "that's super interesting," with aplomb.
I think most of our followers would recognise that super interesting is my euphemism for Tim, shut up. It's kind of a nice way of putting it.
It's sometimes cringeworthy listening back to yourself.
Oh,
I can't believe the amount of times I use the word particular.
Mm. I've got another one, actually, I think. Anyway, but yeah, it comes out when you listen to it. I reckon that's fair, Tim. Fair appraisal. I'll try better next season.
So I think we'll take a chance on continuing to use you as the co-host for the Unforgiving 60 podcast season two.
In my defence.
There is seldom a defence.
In mitigation.
Fine.
I don't prepare. I should. In fact, I do a bit of preparation on the guest out of respect for them. A bit. But I also find that my lack of preparedness keeps things fresh.
Well, we started at the very genesis of the podcast. For each episode, I would do the preparation and research. I would hand you a copy as we were walking in. You would dutifully disregard it and continue on a wayward path. Then I thought, well, there's no point in doing that. But what we'll do is I'll talk about the way that the podcast should flow. You would nod in agreement and then completely disregard that and drag it in different directions. But like a typewriter.
I do wonder. I mean, you can't do the sliding doors. I don't think we would have achieved the success we have if we'd gone with your methodology. I like to think that my spontaneity has taken it in a new direction.
Well, it's the yin to the yang. People often think that we are very similar, but actually we're a lot different. We're a lot different. Yeah. And maybe that's just one little example of how different we happen to be, despite all of the biographical...
ostensible similarities.
Right. Yeah.
No, but it's been good fun. And I think you're right. I think those different approaches probably add something there.
Hmm.
I will continue to do no preparation. But if you can continue to sort of do all the admin in the background, that'd be appreciated.
Oh, I love it. Absolutely love it.
You're good at it.
So this is the finale for season one. Mm-hmm. We're about to click into season two. We've been overwhelmed.
Are our seasons Australia Day to Australia Day? Is that how it's worked out? Accidentally?
I'm nodding, but I don't really know.
I think that from now on, that's it.
The Australia Day start.
Marks the new season.
So what does that mean? We close out this season and pretty much start again?
It means we've probably got to start recording some episodes. We've got 4 days, don't we?
We've got some cool concepts for season two. But one of the things that we wanted to talk about a little bit was the opportunity to partner for the season two of the Unforgiving 60 podcast in a concept that we call ambassadors and allies.
So we've had a bunch of approaches to partner or to get sponsors onto the show that we've been reluctant to jump at because we want to get the right fit. We really want to find those companies that share our values and that have that same sort of relentless pursuit of excellence that represents our guests. And so we're doing it in a very, I guess, deliberate and targeted manner. But yeah, the Ambassadors and Allies program is the vehicle that we're going to look to partner with like-minded companies.
And so for the Allies component, that is those people who want to demonstrate a commitment to us. In return, we'll demonstrate a commitment to them. Naturally, we'll showcase their brand, their goods and services, and we will also give back in terms of our keynotes and workshops on leadership, teamwork and resilience. Mm-hmm. So we've got some cool concepts developed for that. And the Ambassadors program?
Yeah, is more a vehicle for us to represent your products. Again, we're going to be selective here. We want to make a good fit in both the ambassadors and the allies areas. And so if we're on the same sheet of music and the company thinks there's value in us and we think there's value in the company, then through the ambassadors program, we can act as ambassadors for the company, showcase their products and get that mutually beneficial outcome through that means.
If you are all about the relentless pursuit of excellence, if you truly believe in what you're offering, then I'd say let's open a conversation at debrief@unforgiving60.com.
And we'll also put a bit of information about the program on our website, unforgiving60.com.
Lastly, for season two, because we have, an opportunity to share our platform for those people that might have veteran-owned businesses, and I include first responders in that, former firefighters, police officers, ambulance and military. If you're running a small business, then we'd love to also give you a shout out at some point in time. And those not-for-profits, the charities that I know how difficult it happens to be to run a charity, and as do you, Ben, being able to give a little shout out to the not-for-profits and charities as well. And of course, all of that will come gratis.
Without a doubt. That's a wrap.
Finally, let's say some thank yous. Firstly, to all of our guests who have been incredible and the reason why we've experienced tremendous growth on season one of the Unforgiving 60 podcast.
Yeah, and I was going to say not only our guests, but we are starting to get this beautiful referral network. So our listeners are tipping us into amazing people who we would otherwise not have come across, and our guests are begetting other guests. And so we're getting a really beautiful sort of little community around it. We're very thankful for that.
To our friends here at Magic Studio, to Yonku, how much patience has he shown with us?
An extreme amount, and has done some absolute audio magic and some video
magic.
Video
magic as well, made us look good. And to Jason and the team, all of the team here at Magic Studios, they've been absolutely tremendous. And last, maybe second last, thank you to you, Ben, for being my co-host for season one.
Does that mean last is thank you to you?
No.
Oh, okay.
The last thank you must be reserved for those people that download the podcast and listen to us on a regular basis.
We have been, I mean, it sounds trite to say we've been humbled. I had, as Tim said, I started the season slow and begrudgingly. It's not quite the case, but I certainly didn't think we'd reach as many people. And some of the really heartfelt feedback we've received, we're stoked that A, people are listening, and that B, they're finding some value in the discussions. Clearly, the guests are what make it, and that's what provides the mainstay for it. But we're really glad that it's providing some motivation, a bit of entertainment, maybe a bit of inspiration.
Yeah, our episodes have been downloaded tens of thousands of times, and we took a little look yesterday in over 100 countries around the globe.
I didn't even know there were 100 countries.
I think there's 400 countries.
Well, we've got a way to go.
Yeah. So we're at 25%. Some of them probably would not permit the nature of podcasts like ours.
Are we big in Iran?
I don't know. I will check and report back.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, we prepare for season two.
Yeah.
So see you next season on the Unforgiving 60.
Cheers.
Turn on my TV, said I don't believe it, man. Flip through the paper, I don't understand. Death and destruction is daily coming for this. I can't believe it, man. What is this fucking mess? I don't believe. Jump in my car again, the radio.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's it. Now to the debrief. Here at The Unforgiving 60, we relentlessly pursue excellence, and so we'd love to get your feedback, any insights you might have, any reflections on what we've discussed. Certainly, if you are or if you know someone who's living a life less ordinary, we'd certainly love to hear from them as well. You can get in touch with us at debrief@unforgiving60.com. That's unforgiving60.com. Of course, you can also follow us on social media. Just search up Unforgiving 60, that's 60, on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. And if you've enjoyed this podcast, please tell your friends and give us a like on iTunes. Until next time we talk, we wish you all the best, and we certainly hope that what we've discussed can help you feel your own unforgiving 60s with some quality distance run. Cheers. All you businessmen, politicians, get around and meet my friend.